You're listening to Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. Coastal communities across western Alaska reported widespread damage and power outages over the weekend. That's after the remnants of Typhoon Halong brought hurricane-strength winds and record-level flooding to some Alaska coastal communities. The Association of Village Council President said in a Sunday evening briefing that at least one person was still unaccounted for. In the village of Quinguilinoc, high water caused homes to flow off their foundations, some with people still inside. Ryan David was in his home with his four children when the storm hit.
Yeah, the flood lifted us up, and I didn't think it was going to happen. And I'm like, I yelled at like my kids to get up and group up here on the stairs just in case we tip over.
His home floated down a creek where it was caught by a bridge with the family stuck inside. Search, rescue, and evacuation missions were still underway as of Sunday afternoon for several communities in the region. Impacts from the X-typhoon are expected to continue through tomorrow. Governor Mike Dunleavy also issued a disaster declaration for the region due to the storm.
At least three people are still missing and 51 have been rescued following a record-breaking storm that slammed into the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Sunday. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, officials say search and rescue efforts are ongoing.
Coast Guard Commander for Western Alaska Christopher Culpepper compares the devastation in southwest Alaska villages to the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Several of these villages have been completely devastated, absolutely flooded, several feet deep. And so this took homes off of foundations. This took people into peril where folks were swimming, floating, trying to find debris to hold on to in the cover of darkness at nighttime.
Culpepper spoke alongside numerous officials at a news conference on Monday, a day after the remnants of Typhoon Halong barreled into remote coastal communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The storm hit the villages of Kipnuk and Quinguilinoc especially hard. The storm brought winds of over 100 miles per hour and record floodwaters. Helicopters, planes, drones, ships, and pararescuers from the Coast Guard, National Guard, and other agencies worked through the night and are still searching for three people missing from Quinguilinoc. Hundreds of survivors are in communities. Shelters. Mark Roberts, head of the State Emergency Operations Center, says locating every missing person is a top priority. He says officials continue to take stock of the extensive damage. The storm destroyed dozens of homes. Some of them floated off their foundations with families still inside. Several used cell phones to call for help.
It's been very scary. Very, very scary for folks. Let me tell you, the folks that were in houses that were floating and didn't know where they were was one of the most tragic things our folks in the state OC has ever faced.
The storm cracked the runway at the airport in Kipnuk, preventing planes from landing. It snapped utility poles in half, leading to power outages. Alaska National Guard head Torrance Sack says he's activated every member of the state's National Guard and Alaska State Defense Force living in western Alaska. He says that's about 60 to 80 people, and more are set to join.
This may end up being the largest off-the-road system response for the National Guard in about 45 years.
Meteorologist David Kramer with the National Weather Service says in Kipnuk, the water reached 6.6 feet above the normal highest tide mark.
Previous record was 4.7 feet, and that was back in 2000. So almost 2 feet higher than what we have seen before for Kipnuk. Quite a big difference.
The search at Quinguilinoc also broke a record high set last year. In addition to its search and rescue mission, the Coast Guard is also focused on a potential marine disaster. By midday, the only pollution reported was a light sheen in the floodwaters, but the damaged area includes dozens of bulk fuel tanks and other fuel storage facilities. Here's Culpepper with the Coast Guard.
These facilities are those that which the communities rely upon for home heating oil, subsistence through winter, for travel, for fuel for vehicles, boats, aircraft, and their critical assets.
But for now, Governor Mike Dunleavy says spilled oil is a lower priority than search and rescue and recovery.
We got to take care of people quickly. We have to take care of their needs quickly. We have to take care of water, food, sanitation, electricity.
State officials say dozens of nonprofit organizations, businesses, and faith-based groups are also coordinating recovery efforts with the state. Dunleavy has declared a disaster for the region, easing access to additional resources.
We know you need help. We're going to continue to get the help to you. We're going to do everything we can to get everything up and running as quickly as possible. And we will continue to help, not just today, tomorrow, but weeks and months on, and until we get things back to what used to be at least considered semi-normal.
Dunleavy and members of Alaska's congressional delegation say they plan to visit the region as soon as later this week. With additional reporting from Liz Ruskin, reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Dozens of communities in western Alaska are working to restore essential infrastructure and repair damaged homes after the remnants of Typhoon Halong devastated coastal communities. But one stands out. In Kipnuk, Halong's high winds and storm surge left a catastrophe. The State Department of Transportation estimates that 90% of the structures in the community were destroyed. Most of Kipnuk's residents evacuated on military helicopters in the days after the storm. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports from Kipnuk, the few who remain are working to rebuild as winter approaches.
It's Sunday in Kipnuk, and like a lot of folks on Sundays, Tony Paul is headed to the hardware store.
We're making progress every day, seems like.
Unlike a lot of folks, Tony needs a boat to get there. That wasn't always the case.
Floated away, floated in the water. There's like a couple stores down past that way, a bunch of houses.
A week earlier, on Sunday, October 12th, Kipnuk endured the worst storm anyone can remember. Halong's hurricane-force winds pushed seawater more than 6.5 feet above the normal high tide line. Water poured into houses, lifted homes off their foundations, and deposited some of them miles away. It toppled four-wheelers and snow machines, and it left freezers full of food for the winter without power. Now, Kipnuk is in ruins. Piles of debris are everywhere. Anna Kashtak remembers opening the door for the first time once the sun rose.
It was so heartbreaking, devastating. Kipnuk's not Kipnuk anymore.
Kashtak is only back in town for a couple days, retrieving some belongings and important documents from her parents' house. It floated away with them inside. She evacuated to the hub community of Bethel with her boyfriend, parents, and two kids. It seems like everyone here has a story like that. Only a handful of people remain in this village that just a week ago was home to 700.
It happened so fast. Everything changed like in a day, one day, that the rest of their lives are changed in one day.
James Paul is sitting in one of the few places of refuge that remain, the local school. It's in great shape. It's elevated, on pilings. A generator provides power. But the kids are gone. Many evacuated to Anchorage. Others are with friends and family in Bethel, surrounding villages, or other communities around the state. So for now, the Chief Paul Memorial School is a hub for the recovery effort. Packaged food lines the walls. Cafeteria workers are preparing hot meals. Chili is on the menu for dinner. James says the State Department of Transportation tells him some heavy equipment is on the way.
We're getting like mini excavators and skid steers and some more ATVs for the crew here so we can power up the school and the water treatment plant. That's our main objective right now. That's our priority.
But time is running short. Winter is well on its way. There are bits of frost and ponds on the tundra, that and an oily sheen. And a big question looms ahead. Can evacuees return before winter, or at all?
The way that their houses are right now, I don't think they want to come back, especially people whose houses were pulled off their foundation.
There are a few dozen homes that survived the storm and are still livable. James says he wants to stay here if he can. He spent most of his life here.
Kipnuk means family. It means values, traditions. It's my culture. I grew up here and my dad taught me to hunt and live off the land here. So I don't know nothing else about I do know some about city life, but I'd rather be here.
Outside the school, Benjamin Kuktun is unequivocal.
We're going to stay here all winter. Well, I'm not going to leave Kipnuk. These boys ain't going to leave Kipnuk. So we can survive. We got hope.
But when or whether large numbers can return is unclear. Governor Mike Dunleavy, in a request to the federal government, says some evacuees from villages across this vast low-lying delta might not be able to return for 18 months. Standing with a group of young men working to restore basic services, Kuktun is staying positive. He says he'd like to see more residents return to help out.
With teamwork, it can happen. We got hope.
We still do have hope.
Yeah, we got hope every day.
He and his crew are taking it one day at a time, one task at a time. one boat ride to the hardware store at a time. Reporting in Kipnuk, I'm Eric Stone.
Among communities that saw unprecedented flooding from ex-Typhoon Halong, Tuntutuliak evacuated dozens of residents and welcomed in dozens from nearby coastal villages hit hardest by the storm. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, just as the community is beginning to dry out and rebuild, colder weather has arrived.
10 days after ex-Typhoon Halong, the lake-filled tundra surrounding Tuntutuliak is dusted with the first snow of the year. The community's raised boardwalks, not including those that floated away in the storm, are buzzing with activity as people do what they can to prepare for winter.
Watch your fingers, there's a nail there.
At a shallow lake in the center of town, Alaska National Guard members work with residents to clear a massive pile of debris. Oil barrels, smashed up building materials, tires, stacks of logs, appliances, a 30-foot section of boardwalk with a snow machine marooned at one end. All of it has been pushed into one corner of the lake, opposite the winds that tore through Tuntutuliak and raised water levels higher than anyone in the community can ever remember. The smaller boardwalks that branch off of the main drag all have a story to tell. Down one, the home of a disabled man who swam to safety and was pulled from the water by his own crutches. Down another, three metal stairs still stand 100 feet from their home.
This white house right here? It was over there by that, next to that greenhouse.
Village Public Safety Officer Jesse Wassily walks through the hardest hit part of town, a low-lying area along the banks of the Ganuk River known as downtown. 10 days earlier, Wassily and Village Police Officer Sally Andrew risked their lives to help dozens reach safety at the Louis Ongapak Memorial School as homes quickly filled with feet of water.
Sally called me and that's when we started evacuating. The tide was coming in quick.
The ones with medical problem and elders, we got to them first.
Yeah.
At the school, Principal Tamika Galvin says it was hard to watch the rescue unfold.
Every time he went out, I just went into prayer mode because it was so scary. It was pitch black outside.
Galvin says winds pounded the front entrance of the school, sealing the main doors from the outside when she attempted to force them open.
It felt like 2,800-pound men were pushing back at me.
She channeled evacuees to the back door of the school. Galvin says she helped roughly 70 people who arrived soaking wet and scared. The school is still the relief center for the community, with piles of clothes and stacks of aid boxes ready to be picked up. Classes are back in session, and there are some new students, 9 evacuees from Quigilingok who have come with family members to spend the winter. In Tuntutuliak, numerous houses are unlivable, and 26 people have evacuated. Somehow, no injuries have been reported. Elder Henry Lupi has put up his younger brother Adolf and his family for the winter after their house was pushed around 10 feet by floodwaters. He says levity is vital.
Even if it's very sad thing, we're being piled up and still joking with each other.
His brother Adolf is more comfortable speaking in his native Yuktun. Even though I'm staying at my older brother's house, I get homesick wanting to go down there. I'm thankful for my older brother, he says. Adolf has lived in the house down by the river for more than 50 years. He says he can't imagine leaving Tuntutuliak. I didn't evacuate, picturing where I'd be. I would panic if I couldn't breathe. I have anxiety when I'm in a crowd. I imagine that, he says. Progress for the community has come in doses. Some freezers full of subsistence foods that were submerged have since hummed back to life. Adolf's daughter completely disassembled the family's Toyo stove heater, cleaned it piece by piece, and got it going. Now the severely warped home can at least be dried out. Adolf, his wife, and 2 daughters don't know if their home will ever be livable. Many in Tuntutuliak are in the same boat.
You are being ready for the winter and feed somebody who's starving.
Speaking over a bowl of salmon strips set out on the kitchen table, Adolf says he's mostly thinking of others.
We are not dead. Thanks for coming.
In Tuntutuliak, I'm Evan Erickson.
College Gate Elementary School students now have more than 70 new classmates. Their families were forced to move to Anchorage after last month's storm ravaged their homes and communities. Most of them come from Kipnuk and Quigilingok, western Alaska communities where the tundra seems as vast as the ocean compared to the mountains, trees, and tall buildings that crowd the Anchorage landscape. But as KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, their new school feels warm and familiar.
Morning.
Hello.
The day at College Gate starts
just as it did back home with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Recited in the Yupik language or Yuktun. When College Gate began its Yupik immersion program 8 years ago, it had just one kindergarten class and added a new grade every year. Now it's a tight-knit family that just got bigger. And you won't hear anyone here at College Gate complain.
Black ones.
Misty Floyd is an assistant administrator, and as she unpacks donations of new gym shoes for her new students, she marvels at the generosity of the community.
Kind of a bright light in a dark time, so everybody's come together to help these folks out.
College Gate is ready. I stepped up right there.
Daryl Burnson is principal at College Gate. He's Supiak, originally from Old Harbor on Kodiak Island. He says as soon as families arrived at shelters in Anchorage, he began to visit them to find out what their needs are. He says the Anchorage School District has a long history of helping communities struck by disaster. In fact, he grew up hearing stories about how Old Harbor families sheltered in Anchorage after they lost their homes in the 1964 earthquake.
My mother actually stayed on Airport Heights floor when my community was evacuated after the tidal wave took out all of our buildings.
Burnson says College Gate is excited to welcome the new students. He points to the school mascot in the hallway. They're all cougars now, he says.
If the Yupik program wasn't here, to me, they would be a little bit more overwhelmed.
Lorena Warren helped to found the immersion program at College Gate. From sounding out vowels to learning to read. Warren was one of the first in the nation to teach an indigenous language in an urban school. She has come out of retirement to help the school absorb its new students who come from communities where Yuktun is the dominant language.
Seeing other kids that are also Yupik or Native, and then hearing them be taught in Yuktun, I think eases them even just a tiny bit.
Warren says although Anchorage is bigger, the children feel more restricted.
Children are now in a space where they cannot roam free anymore. And I can see that they want to, but it's hard in the city.
In many ways, counselors say the kids seem better able to adapt than their parents. But Tracy Frost, the school nurse, says sometimes the challenges the children face catch her by surprise, like during a vision screening when she told a little girl she needed glasses.
And she was fluently talking in Yupik, telling me that, with a smile on her face too, that her glasses are in Kipnuk. They probably were floating away because her home floated away. She was happy that we were going to help her get some glasses.
Frost says there have been some meltdowns, a boy overwhelmed by homesickness. She also worries about the change in diet, the lack of high-protein foods like fish and seal meat, which has already affected one little boy's health. The school, she says, does help in one way. It restores routine to the day.
When you're rooted in your culture, you are more grounded.
And it's hard to feel grounded when you've lost everything.
I just felt like my house moved to the ocean.
Eileen Aliagorea says she feels safer since she moved to Anchorage. She and her family were inside their home when the flood carried it off.
The house spinned really fast and we were like going down to the river and then we stopped. We hit something really hard 2 times and my living room window broke.
It's a nightmare that Aline says her new friends at the school are helping her to forget. Friends like Lily Lowen.
After something so big happening, they're still so like cheerful and they're so friendly and they were just so fun to be around. And I'm really glad that they are here.
Lily says this experience has been an opportunity to learn about something larger than yourself.
It makes me feel like I could be doing more to help, even though I'm a kid.
But simply being a kid may be a bigger help than Lily realizes. To share jokes and play games like boop.
No, she got you that time.
In Boop, you tag people on the nose, and then they're it. Add some pig snorts, and you get a real giggle fest going. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Hundreds of evacuees from Western Alaska are staying in Anchorage hotels after last month's storms destroyed their homes. Some say they don't know exactly what's next. They hope to move into apartments eventually. Aliona Nyden with the Alaska Desk spoke to a few families who are adjusting to their new daily lives so far away from everything they know.
Ellie Shangeng is sitting on a bed in an Anchorage hotel room with her 2-year-old daughter on her lap. She puts face paint on her forehead and draws red whiskers on her cheeks.
I was keeping her busy.
Their room at the Wingate Hotel is crowded. Shengen's partner sits on the second bed as there are 3 other children play nearby. Toys, clothes, and strollers pile up around them.
We have our own space and everything is just everything around us. Small space.
Shengen and her family are among 670 evacuees from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region who are staying in Anchorage hotels after being displaced by the storm last month. Many are also staying with friends and family. Shengen says the transition has not been easy.
Moving here with our family is okay, but it's not okay. I want to go home. My girl's missing her home. My honey misses our home.
State and federal agencies are working to rebuild the affected villages. But for many, returning before winter is not an option. Officials with the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management say they're also working on a plan to provide temporary housing in Anchorage and in other communities. But first, they need to make sure those homes are furnished and close to other services. So they say there is still no timeline for when people will move from hotels into other homes. In the meantime, families like Shengen's are doing what they can to adjust to life in Anchorage while they wait. For Shengen's 9-year-old daughter, Caitlin, that means homeschooling, so she can help her parents take care of her siblings. Shengen says the family gets breakfast every day, but the hotel room has no kitchen, so they order fast food for the remaining meals.
Fast food every day? Not us. They're used to home-cooked meals all the time. They're used to the native food and stuff what we eat.
Julia Tutak-Stone is Kipnik's police officer and another evacuee. She's staying at the Aspen Hotel in Anchorage, along with her 2 adult sons and young grandsons, each family in their own room. Stone says she's happy the family stayed together.
It was going to be like heartbreaking if they didn't come with me.
Stone says the hotel provides them with free meals and snacks. She takes buses to go to the store and to play bingo. And her grandsons attend the UPIC Immersion Program at College Gate Elementary School. Her son, Alexei Ahumkathak-Stone, says he even brought his boys to Dave & Buster's a few times.
My kids are having a lot of fun here. And they're enjoying their stay here. It's not fun for me, that's for sure, because it's not my kind of life. My life was subsistence.
Both he and his mother say they cannot stop thinking about home. Julia Stone says she replays in her head calls from people who were trapped in their houses.
Everybody's traumatized, especially little kids. It's like a nightmare.
Alexei Stone remembers watching his house flood.
It's like a
dream.
Like we're living inside a dream, but at the same time it really happened.
Yeah. Every day we wake up. Oh, are we home? No, we're not. We're somewhere else. We're in Anchorage.
The family takes one step at a time, Julia Stone says. Back at the Wingate, Shengen says her family has been looking at apartments already. They even filled out paperwork to receive assistance for rent and a deposit.
We're just waiting, but some of us are tired of waiting.
The family especially liked a 2-bedroom apartment they looked at. Shengen says it was big enough for the older children to share their own room and had an open area in the living room so they could just run around.
Oh, my family will be happy. I'll be happy because I'll be able to cook my family food.
Chang'an already knows what their first meal will be. A rice dish baked in an oven with meat and seasonings. She says that will be enough for the whole family. In Anchorage, I am Alona Knighton.
Yesterday marked a month since the remnants of Typhoon Halong devastated communities in western Alaska with high winds and flooding. But recovery in the remote, isolated communities in the region is a long process. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone has this look at where things stand.
Kipnuk took the hardest hit from Halong. Only the school and a handful of houses made it through the record flood in good shape. The vast majority of structures were damaged or destroyed. James Paul is one of a small group of locals remaining in Kipnuk and working on the immense task of rebuilding. And he says there have been some small wins. For one thing, some streetlights are on.
They have been making good progress every day, and every day something changes a little bit now in Kipnuk.
He says the local school, which is still a hub for the relief effort, is also now connected to village electricity, but the community's water system is still offline, and most homes don't have power. Meanwhile, Paul says aid is surging in. Cargo planes drop off heavy equipment and building supplies.
Every agency and everybody that comes out here, I think, has been really helpful, and they want to help. And I can't say enough all the help we're getting.
Kipnuk is one of more than a dozen villages that suffered serious damage in the storm, according to the Association of Village Council Presidents. Of the 3,500 structures state emergency officials have assessed, nearly three-quarters were at least affected by the storm. More than 650 took major damage or were destroyed. Meanwhile, a staggering amount of aid has been flowing to the region from governments, nonprofits, and the private sector. But it likely won't be enough for large numbers of residents to return this winter. In another village devastated by the storm, Quigilingok Tribal Resilience Coordinator Dustin Yvonne says there's just too much damage.
Habitable for the winter has been a question, and we feel like it's not going to be habitable through the winter.
Yvonne says locals and aid workers are keeping busy, working to restore the homes that can be saved, lifting homes back onto their foundations, replacing insulation soaked by the flood, restoring water and power, and so on and so on. But once the sun goes down, he says Quig feels like a ghost town.
It feels empty, and it's not as lively as it used to be before the storm.
For now, the focus is on restoring homes in place, but the long-term future for the village is miles away. Yvonne says the tribe's members voted in the weeks after the storm to officially relocate about 20 to 25 miles northeast to higher ground.
A lot have said that if complete rebuild happens in Quig, many don't feel safe coming back to relive here at the current site.
In Yvonne's opinion, if you have to rebuild most of the village anyway, you might as well do it somewhere safer. But financing that relocation, which could cost tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, will be a challenge. The head of the state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management said at a recent town hall in Anchorage that disaster funding won't cover the costs of moving entire communities. He says it can only help them rebuild and buy them time. The village of Napakiak was already working on relocation to a nearby bluff when Halong hit. The local tribe has been working on what it calls a managed retreat from the eroding banks of the Kuskokwim River for decades. And Walter Nelson, who coordinates that effort, says the vast majority of homes in Napakiak were flooded during Halong. For now, he says crews are working to dry them out, replace insulation, and restore heat. But Nelson says the flood underscores just how urgent relocation is.
We can't predict Mother Nature, and we can't challenge her.
Back in Kipnuk, the future is less clear. For now, even a month after the storm, people in the village are taking it one day at a time. James Paul says he's planning to stay as long as he can, but he's not sure if he'll be able to stay through the winter. But another resident, Benjamin Kuktun, says he has no plans to leave, at least as long as they keep making progress.
As long as we got power from our power plant and with the lights that can power up how we've been living, we're not going to leave. We're going to stay here and work on Kipnuk, rebuilding Kipnuk.
Even with so much ahead, he says he's impressed with what people in Kipnuk have accomplished. With additional reporting by KYUK's Evan Erickson in Bethel and KNBA's Alyona Knighton in Anchorage, I'm Eric Stone in Juneau.